Tonight, I'd like to speak a little bit here on a topic. I, as I do my Bible studies, and I'm sure all of you do this, you write down things that particularly strike you and things that you have ideas, and I like to jot down notes on things as I'm reading and praying about Scripture sometimes, and I think, boy, that'd make a good message. And I oftentimes jot those down, and I have a file that I go through and just look at, and I say, Lord, you know, anything in here you'd want me to preach, or you want to give me something new. And this idea has come back to me several times, and as I go through and look at different things, I keep coming back to this one. And so I prayed about it, and I felt like this, the Lord would want me to speak on this tonight. What I'm going to be speaking on is the missed day of visitation or failing at such a time as this. And I'm sure you understand what I'm saying, that there is a day of visitation when God does visit us, give us opportunities, and sometimes test us. And if we're prepared for that day, then well and good. But there are times when, as David said in 1 Samuel 17, he said, is there not a cause? And there's a cause, there's a time when God prepares us, if we're willing to and if we'll let him, he prepares us. And I believe that there's a cause in all of our lives. For David, it was Goliath and other things, and God just used that. There were so many things in David's life that God prepared him for, and he was used of. But it's very interesting. He said, you know, is there not a cause? And I think oftentimes today, our world is so crazy and so confused that a lot of times we're running so fast, we don't have time to stop and look at the trees for the forest. You know what they say, smell the roses. And we just get lost in the confusion and the chaos. And it seems like, compared to when I was a little boy, I know a lot of people today that are just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And we don't really stop and think about what's the cause in our life, what's the purpose God's put us here for, and sometimes we start to run around and just flap like another chicken. And so today I want to address this topic. I want to ask you, how many of you, raise your hand if you think you've accomplished something great. If you've accomplished something great. Oh, come on. I want it. Good. I see a couple. I see a couple. Yes. Amen. I know that sounds like a loaded question. You're going, whoa, should I raise my hand? I did something great. I said you accomplished something great. Okay. And we all know that we do it by God's help. Okay. Let me ask you this. How many of you plan to accomplish something great in your life? Anybody? My goodness, am I speaking to the wrong crowd here? Amen. Okay. I mean, this is not a loser's club. But, okay, some of you, I think it's just not really knowing why I was asking that and all. You're afraid to answer. And some of you, you're afraid because, you know, we're so used to second-guessing everything and the motives with which people ask things that it's really hard for us to sometimes be perfectly honest. But let me ask you this. Some of you said you have. A lot of you didn't answer. Some said you plan to. A lot of you didn't answer. But is your life meaningful? Is your life meaningful? Is it purposeful? See? And what I'm getting at is this. I don't think that we are afterthoughts with God. There are all kinds of scriptures in the Bible that say that God planned us. He formed us. You know, all of our members were fashioned in continuance in our mother's womb. And God has such a phenomenal plan. And the way he made everything, we know that nothing just evolved. We know that everything is planned so intricately and so precisely and so beautifully. It's just amazing that man has never been able to come close to duplicating anything like God's done, and he never will, and he's foolish to try, and only the blind try to reinvent the wheel or do what God already did, and they should understand. That's why I say the blind, because if they go to the Bible and read, they know that they can't, and they never will. And the only thing that's done is done by the grace of God, and the only thing that we ever accomplish, we accomplish by the grace of God. And so let me just clarify a little bit what I said at first there. I said, how many of you have ever accomplished or have accomplished great things? I think every hand ought to go up. Don't worry about what people think about you. Don't worry about people think, oh, you're prideful or anything else. No, let's just face facts, you know? Have you ever influenced anybody for Jesus? That's a great thing. That is a great thing. There are a lot of people that haven't, that don't, they don't want to, they don't know how to or anything else, okay? Have you ever influenced a little kid to do right? Yeah, what about giving a cup of water unto one of the least of these? Jesus said that's a great thing. Have you ever helped anybody out? Have you ever tried to lift up the fallen, you know, to encourage somebody that's down? That's a great thing. Yeah. There are all kinds of great things that we do. We might not see them that way because, and this is one of the things I'm going to speak on tonight, because we don't look at the little things as being great. When we think of great things, we think, you know, well, who's ever built a skyscraper? Or who's ever, you know, bought the Trump Towers outside of Donald Trump. I don't know who else owned it, you know? Or whoever did all these things, whoever was a congressman or passed laws in the nation. Well, we know that that's not too great because there are a lot of crooks in there and they're not doing a very good job of it. But anyway, so what I'm saying is this, I think you have done a lot of great things. And I think you should plan on doing great things. If you're not planning on doing anything great, then why don't you just ask God to take you home tonight, you know? I mean, why are you taking up space down here and breathing good oxygen, you know? But we're not that way. I know that we all want to do something for God. Anybody that's saved, I think in their heart, they really want to do something for God. Because it says we love him because he first loved us. And if you don't understand God's love, I don't think you're saved. You need to get saved, learn about God's love, and then you'll love him in return. Okay? And we love him because he first loved us, and that means we want to do something for him. We're created in the image of God. We're made in his image, and God is so loving that when a person's right with God, they're loving too. They want to do things for other people and not just for themselves, all right? So, you want your life to be purposeful, meaningful. In 1 Corinthians 6:19, it says what? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Okay, we're not our own. And so, it behooves us to do what God made us to do, and that is to glorify him. 1 Corinthians 7:23 says, ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called, therein abide with God. So God has a plan for us, and we're supposed to abide in the calling wherein we were called, and we're supposed to abide there with God. And believe me, God is not motionless or actionless. God is moving. God created. He's always creating. He's always blessing. He's always doing his work down here on earth. In fact, we know that God's not going to stop in the near future because this book tells us all about what he's still got planned and what's going to happen down here on earth and in heaven. And oh my goodness, God's got a lot to do, and he's doing it. He's very busy doing it right now. And so God created us for fellowship, I honestly believe. I mean, he didn't have to create us as a race of robots or slaves because God made it all himself before we were created. He made the earth, the heavens, the sea, and all the rest of it. He didn't need us then. He doesn't need us now to recreate it and to fulfill his plan, finish his plan. He does need us, though, because he created us for a purpose, and that purpose is not going to be thwarted. You know, his word is not going to return unto him void. So when he talks in the Bible about how he made us and he purposed us for different things, it behooves us to think about that a little bit. Think about, are our lives purposeful, and what are we doing with them? All right. Now, Ephesians 4:4 says, there is one body and one spirit, even as ye are called, in one hope of your calling. Sounds like we all have a calling. Okay? So if we have a calling, it's good for us to find out what it is. 2 Timothy 1:9 says, who has saved us and called us with an holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace, which was given us in Christ Jesus before the world began. Very interesting. You had a calling before the world began. Yes, according to his own purpose and grace, which was given us in Christ Jesus before the world began. Very interesting. So don't ever, you know, don't ever... What's the old saying? Did it ever occur to you that nothing ever occurred to God, you know? Don't ever get the idea that anything's an afterthought with God, because it's not. Because everything is in this book, and nothing ever occurred to God. Nothing ever will occur to him that he didn't know in the beginning. And he laid it out. And everything, you go through the Bible, I've had so many people try to ask me questions like, when this happened, then what? Why did God have to do it? Why? See, they think that God's just following the game along and he's trying to play it the best he can and recover, you know, from bad moves and mistakes and like that. No, no, no. God had the game all figured out way before we ever started playing the game, so to speak, you see. So nothing ever occurred to God. Nothing was an afterthought. Nothing broadsides God. In fact, God, the Bible says he knows the beginning from the end. He knows the end also. So he knows everything and every answer to every question in the whole universe that could ever come up. So, and it says here, to his own, we have a holy calling, which was given us in Christ Jesus before the world began. That's awesome. I think we ought to start thinking about what our calling is, what our purpose is, and then there's some problems. How many people actually accomplish their call in the Bible, and how many people failed? And when we look around today, what do we see? You know, it's amazing how driven the world can be to accomplish its goals. It's amazing how driven people like Bill Gates and Elon Musk and all these other people are driven to accomplish their goals. And yet, how many Christians are really driven the same way? And there are some great ones. I think there are quite a few. There are a lot of Christians out there that are really driven in the power of the Lord to do great things for him. The only difference is the world flashes it all over, you know, and they use multimedia and everything else, and Christians just, a lot of them quietly go about their work and just do the will of God in their lives, and there's not a lot of fanfare, so we don't hear about it as much. But you and I both know we've met some terrific people. There's some awesome missionaries out there, and they're just all kinds of great people if we take the time to make ourselves available to it, okay? So there is a cause and there is a calling, okay? David said, is there not a cause? There have always been critical circumstances which have required the actions of people who were prepared, positioned, and surrendered to the will of God. Okay? The first one that I'd like to mention here is Esther. We all know the story of Esther, so I have quite a few illustrations here. I hope to have time to get through these, but so I'm not going to go in great, great detail with a lot of these, but just in case to refresh us, it says in Esther 2:7, and he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king. She required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. Interesting, not just the king, but all of them. And there were quite a few women, I guess, in that competition. So to impress everybody would have been quite the deal, quite a feat. And Esther 4:14 says, now we know that this was how Esther came to the throne. There was a competition. Vashti displeased the king, and so he deposed her as queen. And then he had a talent search, so to speak, for, what was this? Syria's Got Talent or something? Unlike America's Got Talent, but, you know, that's about the way the king did it. And so he was looking for a new queen, and they prepared all these women and groomed them meticulously so they knew wisdom and understanding and knowledge, the things to say, the protocols, how to be proper, how to do everything to please the king. And then, boy, they put them through the puff and buff and everything else, and they shined them all up so that when they went in, they were radiant before the king. Now, Esther outdid all the rest of them. Okay, that's how she came to the throne. But there was a lot behind Esther. And we know that God divinely had a purpose, a divine purpose and a calling for her. In Esther 4:14, it says, for if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this. You see, in the midst of all this, Esther had just won the greatest beauty pageant and talent show in the world and got the highest price. She got a fabulously rich king, very powerful king for a husband. And and all of this happened, and now all of a sudden, it seems like the tables are turned and just the most unbelievable horror has descended upon her and a few in the know, insiders, because they realize there's a plot to totally exterminate her people, you see. And so what did she do? Well, we know that she feared, first of all, because she couldn't approach the king unless she was requested, and he hadn't requested her. Secondly, she fasted and got the people to fast with her. And thirdly, she acted in faith. And so this is how Esther handled this situation, or as it's so famously stated, for such a time as this. And I'll guarantee you, all of us are going to come to some point in our lives when we're going to come to such a time as this. It may not have to do with moving into a palace and gaining a king for a husband, you know, it may not have to do with that type of extravagance and all, but there's going to be a time in our lives when all of us are going to be faced for such a time as this, when it's going to require us to stop and think, and usually those times come with fear, and then they require fasting and acting in faith. Okay, so we see how Esther handled it. Now, there are several things I want to say. The reason why some people never see their day of visitation is because they're not prepared for it. Tonight, I'm just going to give you a few reasons why maybe we don't see our day of visitation or we don't react to it properly, and why sometimes we're handicapped and we don't handle it like we should. In the Bible. Is there a cause? Yes, there's a cause. Yes. Do we have a calling? Yes, we have a calling. Yes. Do we have a day of visitation? Yes, there's one coming. You know, God didn't make our purpose so mundane down here that we'll never be called on to do anything important. No, God didn't say, I've got, you know, 167 people chosen to be kings and rulers and all that, and the rest of you are all plebeians. No. God didn't say that. We've all got something great that we can do. Like I said before, everybody sitting here in front of me has done something great, whether you realize it or not. You have. You've influenced somebody. I know people that have witnessed to people and led people to the Lord. I also know people that are sitting here right now that have witnessed to relatives, and even though relatives maybe haven't gotten saved and changed, they've stopped and they've started turning their views, and they're realizing that there's something out there that they didn't understand before, they didn't know about, but it's necessary, needed, it's very important, and they're starting to look into it. Maybe you've just helped somebody, encouraged somebody that you don't know about. Yeah. I think we all do that. There are times when we do the littlest things. I did something a while back, and to me, it was just second nature. I didn't even think about it. It was just a logical thing to do. And yet, to another person, it just absolutely blew their mind. They took it as the greatest act of kindness that they had seen in years. And I didn't think anything of it. But, you know, and they kept mentioning it to me, and I thought, that is really strange. That is really strange, you know. But I'm sure we've all done that. We've all had times when it seems like nothing to us, you know. If you're driving down the road and you have a gas can in the trunk for your lawnmower and somebody's out of gas, it's nothing to you to pull over maybe and give them the can of gas or pour it in their tank, you know. What is it? Maybe, well, nowadays, $12, $15. But it's nothing. It takes 10 minutes of your time. But to them, it's the greatest thing in the world. They didn't have to spend 3 hours in the evening, at night, or when it's dark. Maybe it was a woman who was alone and afraid. They didn't have to spend that on the highway by themselves. So we don't know. Now, number one, prepared flight places for prepared people. I heard this years ago. I heard this little phrase. And it really stuck with me. Some people never see their day of visitation because they're not prepared for it. In other words, we have to be prepared. You know, you just don't take a fellow someday and who's been, okay, well, let's just say that a fellow who's run a lawn mowing business all his life, and tomorrow he says, I'm going to become the chief engineer for Elon Musk. I'm going to design space shuttles and rockets. It's not going to happen, probably, you know, because a fellow that's just done lawn mowing business all his life, or I don't care what he's done, he's worked in an office downtown, chances are he's not prepared at all to design rockets. And if he does, I don't think I'd want to fly on one, you know. I'd let somebody else test it out first, okay? So some never see their day of visitation because they're not prepared for it. Why? Distraction. A lot of people get distracted. You know, I've talked to little boys, it's funny, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? I'm going to be a fireman, or I'm going to be the president, or I'm going to be this or that, you know. Come to think of it, I haven't heard any boy say he wants to be president in a long time, you know. Maybe it's because they've seen what we've had for presidents lately. Of course, the need might be greater than ever now, but anyway, distraction. Don't we all get distracted? Like I said, things are getting so chaotic and crazy, it's really hard to stay focused and to stay on the right course all the time and make sure that everything you're doing supports the main goal. That's a hard thing to do, okay? Sometimes it's fear. We're just afraid, you know, I cannot possibly do that. Well, if I do that, if I wage this, I'll lose it all. Or if I go to med school and then I'm not accepted, if I can't pass the medical boards, then I'm sunk. All my money for college is gone and then I'm destitute, you know? People are so paranoid and fearful nowadays, okay? There's procrastination. That's another one. A lot of people are never prepared and ready for what's coming tomorrow because they kept putting off the lessons they should have learned today. And so they put them off, and then tomorrow comes. I know what that's like because I got disenchanted with piano when I was about 10 years old, maybe younger than that, 8 or 10, and I didn't go back to it, and I put it off and put it off and put it off. And now I know what it's like to face your nemesis. So, Okay, so it could be procrastination. It could be slothfulness, you know? It could be slothfulness. I mean, in the Bible, what is it? The Cretans, it says, are always slow bellies, you know? I don't know what a slow belly is, actually, but to me, I would think it's somebody that's pretty lazy and shiftless, and they're not a ball of fire, that's for sure. Okay, so let's look at our first case. Here's Samson. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. That's Judges 16:21. Now, like I said, I'm skipping through here a little bit. So Samson was taken. The Philistine got him. This was after he was betrayed by Delilah. And by the way, just in case you're not real straight on the story, you know, Samson had a Philistine wife. He went after a woman, got her, married her, and then she was given to another man. It's, I think, a little understandable why Samson got so angry and went and burned the fields of the Philistines, and why Samson hated the Philistines and all, because he was treated so badly. And then the Philistines actually, they tried to use his wife against him. And then when he met Delilah, they did. They got a hold of Delilah, and she became a secret agent, you might say. I don't want to say an undercover agent, but she became a secret agent for the Philistines. And, you know, she betrayed Samson. So here's Samson. You know, it's understandable why things went a little bit the way they did in his life. I think a problem was lust. Samson had a real hard time with desire when he saw a beautiful woman, and he obviously didn't always choose the best. I mean, it's too bad. Delilah seems like she was a prostitute. And so anyway, in Judges verse 27, it says, "Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there." Now this is after Samson had been captured, put his eyes out, he'd been grinding, he was a prisoner. But I want to say this. Well, I'll wait a minute. Okay, so this is when he was taken, and they were having this big public gathering meeting, a banquet of all the Philistines, lords and ladies and the whole thing. And they were there in this temple and with pillars, and according to the way it's described in the Bible, it was a humongous place. It was a big banquet, and on the roof, they had a place for people to look down and around. It probably was built in a U shape or something, or a circle, and it was made so that people could also be on the roof, the overflow from the people that wouldn't fit inside down below. And today, the way some buildings are built with huge mezzanines and balconies, which are terraced way up. Anyway, so it says there were about 3,000 men and women that beheld while Samson made sport. And Samson called unto the Lord and said, "O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes." They'd put out his eyes also. And so he had a reason to hate the Philistines, I think. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. It's very interesting. So Samson, you might say that he was there for such a time as this. It was his opportunity to avenge himself on the Philistines for how they had treated him. And the Philistines were his enemies. But Samson, it's really sad that it had to come this way, you know. And why? Well, I think because Samson got off the track when he was younger, because he got distracted, because of his love for the wrong kind of women and things like that, it can sidetrack you. It can definitely sidetrack you. In Judges 16:31, it says, "Then all of his Then his brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah, his father. And now get this, and he judged Israel 20 years. To me, that's sad. That's really a sad commentary. He was a judge of Israel. I think he might have been a great man when he was judging, and a great man before he got involved with Delilah and before all this happened. But what am I saying? Did he fulfill the purpose of God for his life? He did a great thing in the end by destroying a lot of the Philistines, but was that his call and his purpose? I don't know. I really don't know if that was, you know, or if that's something that God said, okay, because things have developed the way they are, this is what he's going to end up doing. And I'm not saying God decided after the fact. God knew it all ahead of time, but he knew that it was going to work out this way. Now, was that the greatest he could have done? I don't know. I don't know if he had not gotten distracted and all that. I'm just saying that we have to be careful that we don't get distracted in our lives. We have to be careful that we're not sidetracked from the main cause and the purpose of our life so that we'll be prepared when that the challenge comes. The next thing I want to talk about is the example of the five virgins. And this is just another example. I'm giving examples of these things. In Matthew 25:1, then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh. And of course, we know what this is speaking of, the fact that some will be ready to meet the Lord and some won't. But it's very interesting here that, like I said, some get distracted. This is an example of distraction or procrastinating. I don't know why 5 of them didn't have any oil, but they obviously weren't prepared. They weren't prepared for their day of visitation. And we have to be very careful as we look at these things. We ought to look at these, and instead of just, you know, reading the Bible and saying that's an interesting parable or story or whatever, you know, just reading what it is, some of its history. And but this says the kingdom of heaven likened unto 10 virgins. It doesn't actually say their names or anything, so I'm assuming this is just a parable. But what I'm saying is this. We have to be careful that we don't read these things and just shrug them off. We have to say, oh my goodness, if God put it in the Bible, it's important. And if it's important to God, he's trying to teach us a lesson, you know? And so we ought to go, man, that's a horrible condition to be in. I hope I'm never not like, I hope I'm never like that. Yeah. Okay. So what's the remedy for that? Okay, in Matthew 13:46. We have the case of the man who found the pearl of great price. And it says, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Okay? So you have to focus on the main thing, get back to the main thing and not get distracted. I like Proverbs 18:1. Proverbs 18:1 says, through desire, a man, having separated himself, seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. Okay? So it says through desire. The first thing is you've got to know what you want. You have to have a goal in mind or know what your purpose is, what your destiny is, what God's called you to do. And then it says here, having separated himself, first is the desire, second is the separation from everything else. You know, you can't be you can't be, well, I had a friend of mine who was a businessman, and he became quite successful, but he was quite a maverick too in the way he operated. But he told me one time, he said, son, he said, Johnny, I went to college, and he said, the only thing I learned there was how to play ping pong and the piano. I don't think he paid much attention to his classes or anything. I don't think he cared, really. But he's one of these kind of guys that he's, you know, he told me one time, you don't learn anything in college. You just learn how to learn. But that was his take on it, okay? So what I'm saying is this. Through desire, a man having separated himself, you can't be out here saying, you know, I'm going to learn how to build houses. And then I'm also going to learn, I'm going to put up a dry dock over here and learn how to build ships. I want to build a submarine. And then I think I'm going to invest in the stock market and become another, I can't think of his name now, but the fellow that, the Omaha, from Omaha, Nebraska, I can't remember his name now. Anyway, but you're not going to do all that. You can't do all that and do it well. You've got to be focused. And so it says here, having separated himself, seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. And of course, there's a lot of scriptures I wanted to bring in here about love not the world, you know, neither the things that are of the world. The fact is, if we want to do what's pleasing to God, and if we want to be successful, when our day of visitation comes, we've got to separate ourselves from this world. This world will do its best to distract us and keep us from ever being ready for our day of visitation, okay? Secondly, the important preparations are rarely the obvious ones, okay? I'm going to have to speed it up on this. Okay, I preached a sermon one time called, what was the title exactly? But it was about the main act is not on the stage, or the main act is in the wings, I think. And basically what it was is, when I was in high school, I was in the drama class, drama club, theater, like that. And no, I didn't act. I don't think, I couldn't do anything like that, I guess. But I worked on stage crew. So I worked on props, things behind the scenes and all that. And believe me, it's the things going on behind the scenes, behind the curtains, are just as important as what's going on main stage, if not more so. One of the things that was very interesting to me when Doug and I took a cruise several years ago is the most fascinating thing was this little tour they gave you one day and toward the end of the cruise, and very few people, you had to pay for it. It wasn't cheap, and there were only a certain number of people that could go on it, but they went through and they showed us the whole ship, and they showed us the innards of the ship, and all the things that passengers never see. And it was really fascinating to me. I just like that kind of thing. But the thing, one of the things that stuck with me is, on most cruise ships, they have a huge theater. They have a Broadway-style theater, and during the cruises, they have all kinds of acts, everything from putting on plays to sideshows to, you know, Wheel of Fortune games, just all kinds of stuff, everything to entertain people, of course. And when we went through there, we saw in the back, first of all, how the stage was built and how much room it required for all the extra props and everything. An enormous amount of space on that ship was dedicated to everything that would make those performances successful. And then the thing which really got me was the fact that when they showed us the dressing rooms, and all the closets, the costume areas and everything. And you know, people don't ever stop and think about this, but a tour group, performers, they only perform for so long, so they'll only do a couple cruises. They're not year-round all the time. So they're out there for, like, sometimes they're out there for 11 or 12 weeks, and they're doing the same show, and then they'll rotate to another ship. Well, when people come back on, all of a sudden, different performers, they have to have a fleet of seamstresses that can just tailor all the costumes and everything for the new people. You know, if Santa Claus gained weight, you got to have somebody there to let out that costume and make it fit him. And so they have all those people on board doing that. I mean, it's phenomenal what goes on behind the scenes and just everything that they had to have. And it was just amazing. Anyway, so the important preparations in life are rarely the obvious. I worked in quality control for years. And, you know, it's amazing what goes on behind the scenes to make a little gizmo, any little thing, work. And you can take anything from a ballpoint pen, you know, and there has to be a lot of testing and proving and rework and redesign and everything else before it's going to work perfectly and last. A lot of that, but people don't realize that. They just grab up a pen, write with it. They never even stop and think about what went into it or how many tries there were before it failed. I mean, just look at how long it's taken for us to get from an incandescent lamp to LEDs and all the failures along the way and everything else. And so the important things are rarely the obvious ones. And nowadays, we live in a day and age in a world where most people don't want to do the little things, the hidden things. All they want to do are the big splashy things, you know? Okay, as another example, you ever change the wheels on your car, do a brake job or anything else? One of the most important things that most people never even think about is you've got to have those lug nuts tight. I know a man that got in a hurry and ran out of time, and so he quickly wrapped the rest of the job up real fast and then changed his clothes, ran in, jumped in the car, went to work, and about 4 miles from his house, the lug nuts came loose and he lost a wheel on the back of his car. That's not a good situation. Why? Just little things, little bitty things, the lug nuts. Okay, let's look at Joseph. In Genesis 45:7, and God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Okay, so this was Joseph's time. This was the thing that God had prepared Joseph for and sent him along the way. But what did he have to learn in the meantime? He had to learn a lot of things. And he had to go through a lot of things. Joseph would never have been prepared to stand before Pharaoh if he hadn't first learned how to tend the sheep, learn how to go out, take supplies to his brethren in the field, and then being in Potiphar's house. Good night. I can't even imagine what that would be like. Potiphar would be like a billionaire, and you going and running his affairs, managing his whole house. It says everything was under Joseph's hand, you know, even the food he ate. So I would imagine there's quite a staff there. Now, would any one of us be equipped to just jump in and take over managing like Mar-a-Lago or whatever, Trump's place down there in Florida? He's probably got a staff of 100 people that man that place, keep it up, the groundskeepers, the butlers, the maids, everything under the sun. And I don't think that most of us would be qualified to go down there and just step in and say, now, here's the way it's going to go, you know. And that's why Joseph needed that training that he got. And then, of course, we know how what happened in the prison. I don't have time for that, okay. And so then in verse 14 of Genesis 40, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself, changed his raiment, and came in unto Pharaoh. Okay, at that point, he had to be able to perform. That meant that there was no last minute. The last minute, you know, quick, where's, what's her name, Emily Post Book of Etiquette, you know? What do I do? How do I go in there? You know, tell me something, you know? No. You know, when the show goes on, you've got to be ready, see. And so we see that Joseph was prepared, and the things that happened to prepare him were not fun things. Getting sold by his brethren, becoming a slave, being framed, you know, put in a worse prison. I mean, all these things, forget it. That's not the kind of things we want to go through, okay? Also, some of the most important things are rarely the obvious ones. What about Naaman, the captain of the host of King Assyria? Was a great man with his master and honorable because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." We know so little about this gal. But do you realize she was the instrument God used to bring Naaman to the prophet and to get his healing? Such a little inconsequential thing. But look at what this little girl did. She did something that not all of the rest of, nobody else in Israel did. Nobody else in Israel was in her position and had the ear of Naaman's wife. You see? And people might have said, "What good is she? Don't waste any time on her. She's just a kid, you know?" And yet, look at what she did. And that's why I asked you that question earlier, because I think all of us have done similar type things. Okay? All right. Next, wrong priorities can sabotage you. We talked about getting distracted and all that. But look at Jehoshaphat and Ahab in 1 Kings 22, and they continued 3 years without war between Syria and Israel. And it came to pass in the third year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel, and he said unto Jehoshaphat, "Wilt thou go with me to battle to Ramoth-Gilead?" And Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses." Oh boy, he pledged his affinity with Ahab. And then he said, and Jehoshaphat said unto the king of Israel, "Inquire, I pray thee, at the word of the Lord today." You know, I think he made a big mistake here. Okay, wrong priorities. Maybe he felt like, you know, he should help out the king. And they were brethren, so to speak, from the same, they were both Israelites. But even though one was Judah and one was Israel, under the divided kingdom. But the fact is, maybe he felt like I should be with my brethren and whatever he asked of me, I should support him and I should do it and all that. But he didn't stop to say, was it right? Was it what God wanted him to do? And I'm afraid that there's a lot of times when Christians can mislead other Christians. And just because you have a Christian friend, that doesn't always mean that what they want to do is right. And maybe he should have said first, "Let's go and ask the Lord before I promise that I'm in league with you." And of course, we know what happened, the sad thing that happened, because Ahab was so bent on doing what he wanted to do and going to war, he didn't really want to listen to a prophet. And all of his seers or false prophets, soothsayers and everything, they were all window dressers. And so he didn't really want to know what God had in store for him or what God wanted him to do. And then when Micaiah prophesied, he was mad because he knew Micaiah wouldn't prophesy anything good about him. In other words, Micaiah usually told the truth and he didn't want it. And then why would Jehoshaphat go into battle with a king like that? You see, especially when the prophet of God had said that you're going to be killed, you know, you're not coming back. So wrong priorities can sabotage you. I have this, you know, showing up at the wrong battle will not win the right war. And I'm afraid that's what a lot of people get involved with. They get involved with the wrong battle, and then they wonder why they didn't win the war, you know. We have to be very careful and make sure our priorities are right, and we don't even let people that we think are right with God influence us to do anything that we wouldn't have done ourselves if we hadn't been influenced by them. In other words, don't let well-meaning friends or others overturn your priorities in the proper decisions you normally make. Okay, time is flying here. All right, the remedy, what's the remedy? It's in Nehemiah, okay? So we see that Nehemiah was focused, okay, on, he was focused on what the job at hand was, rebuilding the walls, you see? And that's why Nehemiah went and he did what he did. And also he avoided the pitfall that Jehoshaphat made, because when Sanballat and Tobiah came and wanted to join forces with him, he knew, no, we're not going to do that. And so he kept his priorities and he kept going to God and making sure that the thing that he was doing was right before God and not influenced by someone else. Okay. Now, one other thing that sidetracks us sometimes is we're so focused on the next that we miss what is now. Okay. And when I was in Bible college, I'll never forget, you know, a lot of young people, and they're all zealous and they really want to serve the Lord and they're all excited and sold out for God and everything else. And one of the things that happened, unfortunately, several cases I saw of it, was young men that got in their second or third year of Bible college, and then they had a friend back home, or they knew a pastor, and he said, well, you know, when you get out of school, come and see me. I need an assistant, or I need a music leader, or I need, you know, a youth director, youth leader. And sometimes those young fellows would get so excited and think about the work that's coming up and what they're going to do and how God, they just are sure that God's calling them into something and God's leading that way, that they'd quit school. Because they say, ah, I'm wasting time here when I could be out there as a youth director. I could be out there. And I can't tell you how many times those same fellows failed later. And it wasn't always because they just didn't know how to be a youth director or an assistant pastor. But it's because they sometimes, what they did was a manifestation of a habit, a tendency they had in their lives, that whenever something came up that seemed urgent, they would sidetrack or sabotage that which was important. And if we're not careful, we can do that. You know, sometimes we can say, oh, I mean, I know people that have been in careers, and then something will come up and they'll say, well, if I just do this, I can make a switch and I can do this. And next thing you know, they're jumping around or they've made a change or two, and then things don't work out. And then all of a sudden they find out, I've really hurt myself. Because that field which I was in and I could have stayed in and progressed, now I've jumped around and done this and this and this and this, and they don't want me anymore. You see? We haven't had a real recession lately, but I can remember going through one in the early 80s. There was a really bad recession. A lot of you can remember it. Some of you folks are a little older. And I got laid off 6 times in 4 years. I averaged 1 month of layoff for every 3 months I worked. And it was tough. And people were just, you know, a lot of people just, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And of course, it was frustrating. It was very hard. It was very, very, very hard. Even people that had businesses were struggling. And of course, most of the fellows, when I was in Bible college, we were just out there trying to find any job just to get through school. And I can remember so well going to different factories and applying just everywhere I could. And walking in, and I can remember hearing things like, a fellow said to me, he said, oh. So he says, you don't have any experience really in this area, and I've got journeymen with 30 years experience laid off, and you think I'm going to hire you? I said, I had to ask. Sorry. Thank you. You know? But that's the way it went. It was really tough. I borrowed a lawnmower one day. I didn't even have a decent lawnmower myself. I called my landlady that I had rented from before, a sweet elderly lady. I asked her if I could borrow her mower, and she said, sure, honey, you know that. And so I went over and picked up her lawnmower, and I went through a whole neighborhood, upper middle income neighborhood, trying to mow yards. And I'll never forget, I came to one house, knocked on the door, and the guy looks at me. I said, could I mow your yard? You know, I'm out of work. And he goes. So he came out the front door and walked around and opened up his garage door. And he had a lawn tractor, he had a riding mower, he had two push mowers and all this other stuff. And he said, see all that? He says, I'm laid off too. I said, thank you. Welcome to the crowd, you know. Turn around and walk off. I mean, that kind of thing happened all the time. Yeah, I mean, but a lot of people left. You know, they started hearing, there's jobs in Texas, there's jobs in Texas. And I can't tell you how many people I know of that left the church where I was going. It was a very large church, so there were a lot of people. It wasn't like a church this size, but a lot of people left going down to Texas because they heard there were jobs. They went down there and maybe they got a job. They worked a while and then things started happening. And I know families that when they left that area and they were going to church, they were pretty good, what you'd say, good Christian families. And they went down to Texas, and when they came back, the kids were nothing like when they left. You might say the devil had gotten a hold of the kids, and the kids were worldly. They didn't care about church. Mom and dad were frustrated in tears. It was exactly like Naomi, you know? And she left. Naomi means pleasant. And when she came back, she said, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. Mara means bitter. She said, the Lord hath dealt bitterly with me. A lot of people miss out on the challenge of their life. They miss that day of visitation because they get sidetracked for one reason or another. Okay? And because they get so focused on what's ahead that they don't take care of what's now. Okay? I'll just mention this quickly. There's another thing, and that is some people are constantly preparing, but they never get to the point of doing the job. I have a friend who is in his 60s, and he has, over the years, as far as I know, he has probably worked 50% of the time and gone to school 50% of the time. And his pattern is that he'll get a job, but he doesn't last in the job very well. He has really real problems in the workday world, in the job market. And so he'll get a job and he'll not do very well, and then eventually he'll lose the job. And so instead of just going and looking for another job, he constantly, academia is much easier. So he knows how to get grants and he knows how to apply for all kinds of, you know, student money loans and all the rest of it, and he's constantly gone to school. And in his mid-60s, he is just completing another degree and going to go out and try to start in another field he's never been in before. So he's changed fields completely. And I don't see how he's going to make it. I really don't. Because they don't hire 60-year-old men as new hires that don't have any experience in the field whatsoever, because they don't want to put a lot of training and money into them, because how long do they have? Even if the guy can work till he's 70, that's only, I mean, this guy's what, mid-60s? Less than 10 years, and they're not going to invest in that. And I'm really afraid for him. I really feel badly. Because he'll get out, he'll get frustrated, the job won't work out, and it'll just be the same old thing over and over and over again. You see? Yeah, always preparing, but never really getting to the point where he could accomplish anything or say, I am successful in this area. I've done it, and I can do it. I think most people in here, I can just look around at a few people in here, and if you lost your job today, you could probably easily, I don't know, but you could go out and get another job in the same field. You could get another job and keep right on going. Yeah. But not everybody's like that. But we have to remember that, you know, there's there's a price that has to be paid, preparation, okay? We see that with a rich young ruler. The rich young ruler, he was preparing. He had done all the good things when he talked to Jesus, and he said, all these things have I done from the time I was young. And Jesus said, okay, now here's what you do. Now go give all your goods away, your wealth, and then come and follow me. Couldn't do it. He could prepare forever, but when it came to the challenge, okay. The same thing we see with the rich man that was building bigger barns all the time. He said, boy, here, I'm ready to retire. He said, I've got all these goods, and I've got more grain coming in. The harvest has been good this year, and I don't have any place to put it. I'm going to tear down my barns and build bigger. And the Lord said, this night thy soul is required of thee. You see, we have to be careful because we don't know what night that's going to come. We don't know when the Lord's going to say that to us. Okay? And one of the things that's sad is I know too many people right now that are very, very wealthy, and they have built the bigger barns, and they have the bigger barns and the bigger bank accounts and the bigger investments and all the rest of it. And they keep saying, when I get a little more, but they've never really started putting it into use for the Lord. Yeah, I heard a missionary preach a real strong sermon one time when I was in Russia, when Doug and I were over there, and we were listening to a tape that the missionary we were staying with, it was somebody he knew, and boy, this fellow preached. He said, some of you got $100,000 back then. $100,000 was a lot. Today they're $250,000. Motor home sitting in your garage, and he says, you use them twice a year for tailgate parties at the big ball games. He said, boy, if that couldn't be supporting a lot of missions work. You know? And sometimes we need to stop and think about that. How big do our barns have to be? And I'm sure that needs come by where the Lord's testing us and saying, is there not a cause? And if we're not careful, we'll be so in love with the world, we'll say, oh, my God, I don't think that's really that big a deal. That's not that big a cause. Somebody else will do it, or I can't afford to do it now. I'm almost at my goal, you know? We have to be careful we're not tearing down our barns and building bigger all the time. And then finally, I'll say this. A lot of people are always looking for the big and the great things to do. And this is really sad because this is what Saul looked for. It says, you know, in the beginning when he was small in his own eyes, then God could use him. But he got to the point where he got big and proud and puffed up and, you know, the same thing with Nebuchadnezzar. Is this not great Babylon, which I have built by my own power? You see? And some people, all they do is they look for the big things in life, but our issues and the causes that come along sometimes, is there not that cause? Sometimes they're not the huge things, the momentous, the great things, you know? I'm not looking for the next time I pick up my phone and it's Washington and says, will you come and address Congress for us? Believe me, I'm not looking for that. I guarantee you that's probably never going to happen. But maybe there are little things. Maybe I've got a neighbor that's hurting down the street, you know. And I keep thinking about the time I shoveled a lady's sidewalk. I didn't think anything of it, but she had gotten hurt the week before, and I didn't know it. And she couldn't do it, and she was really worrying and concerned about who was going to shovel her walk and that people were going to get hurt and that it would turn to ice and she'd slip on it and everything else. And I found out later that that just seemed to be the biggest godsend to her because she didn't have to stay in her apartment, be afraid of the ice building up on her walk and everything else. And, you know, like I said, we've all done things, and it's a good thing that we really don't know how important some of them are or how they are in some people's eyes. Because we do have this problem with ego, you know, and God has to keep a check on that. But so what I want to say is just this, that we do have divine appointments in life, that we have a day of visitation or a such a time as this. Is there not a cause? And it behooves us to be careful and allow God to work in us and prepare us so that we're ready when that time comes. And then to make sure that we stay on the track, we stay focused, and we stay in the perfect will of God so that we're at the right place at the right time and God can use us. you see. Like I said, Samson, I think it's a tragedy. God used him, but I wonder how much more he could have used him if he had been able to keep his life focused toward the end. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to an audio message from McGregor Road Baptist Church. We are located on the southeast side of Indianapolis, Indiana. To learn more about our church, visit www.actonschurch.com. You can also call us at 317-862-3414. Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you as you seek to grow in the Lord.